Translation by Srila Prabhupada. The activities of Lord Ram were full of suffering, but Lakshman, of his own accord, tolerated that suffering. Sir, if you repeat after me. The activities of Lord Ram were full of suffering, but Lakshman, of his own accord, tolerated that suffering. I'll just do a prayer first, honoring the Charitam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, which I forgot, so excuse me. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So I'll chant the three following verses and the purport. So Nishedakarite Nare Yati Chotabai Monadari Rahi Lakshmana Mane Dukhi Pai. Translation. As the younger brother, he could not stop Lord Ram from his resolution, and so he remained silent, although unhappy in his mind. Krishna avatare jyata hoile savara karana. Krishna ke karale nana sukha ashvadana. Translation. When Lord Krishna appeared, he, Balaram, became his elder brother to serve him to his heart's content and make him enjoy all sorts of happiness. Text 153. Rama Lakshmana Krishna Ramera Amsa Vishesha Avatara Kale Donhe Donhate Pravesha. Translation. Sri Ram and Sri Lakshman, who are plenary portions of Lord Krishna and Lord Balaram respectively, entered into them at the time of Krishna and Balaram's appearance. Purport. Actually, I'll just read that translation again. Sri Ram and Sri Lakshman, who are plenary portions of Lord Krishna and Lord Balaram respectively, entered into them at the time of Lord Krishna's and Lord Balaram's appearance. Purport. With reference to the Vishnu Dhammatara, the Laghu Bhagavatamrita, it explains that Ram is an incarnation of Vasudev, Lakshman is an incarnation of Sankarshan, Bharat an incarnation of Pradyuma, and Satraguna is an incarnation of Aniruddha. The Padma Purana, that Ramachandra is Narayan, the Padma Purana describes that Ramachandra is Narayan, and that Lakshman, Bharat and Satraguna are respectively Sesha, Chakra, and Sankha, the conch shell in the hand of Lord Narayan. In the Rama Gita, the Skanda Purana, Lakshman, Bharat, Sahaguna have been described as the triple attendants of Lord Ram. Om Jnana Timrandhasya Jananjana Salakeya Chaksho Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Now, what I'd like to do is, there's an explanation where it seems to be there's a difference between the accounts of what Lord Ram, Lakshman and his other brothers are expansions of. But I found, actually, it was in the Canto 5, Chapter 19, Text 2, an explanation of why the difference is between the accounts of the incarnations. It says here, this is the purport, with reference to the Vishnu Dhammat Tara Lagu Bhagavamrita, it explains that Ram is an incarnation of Vasudev, Lakshman is an incarnation of Sankarshan, Bharat an incarnation of Pradyuma, and Satruguna is an incarnation of Aniruddha. The Padma Purana describes that Ramachandra is Narayan, and Lakshman, and Bharat, and Satraguna are respectively Sesha, Chakra, and Sankha, the conch shell of at the hand of Lord Narayan. In the Rama Gita of the Skanda Purana, Lakshman, Bharat, Satraguna have been described as the triple tendons of Lord Ram, virtually the same a purport. But then it says, the Padma Purana, however, says that Lord Ramachandra is an incarnation of Lord Narayan, and that the other three brothers, Sesha, Chakra, Shankha, therefore Baladev, Vidyabhusan, has concluded Tad Idam Kalpa Behid Naiva Sabhavyam. In other words, these opinions are not contradictory. In some millenniums, Lord Ramachandra and his brothers appear as incarnations of Vasudev, Sankarshan, Pradyuma and Aniruddha. And in other millenniums, they appear as incarnations of Lord Narayan, Sesha, Chakra and Sankha. The residence of Lord Ramachandra on this planet is Ayodhya. Ayodhya city is still existing in the district of Faizabad, which is situated on the northern side of Uttar Pradesh. And so it says that in other millenniums, their incarnations change where they expand from or where they originate from. So this Vishnu Tattva can be quite bewildering, actually. But it's the Lord himself. And there's a very nice part where it says, and if I can find it, in whatever form one knows the Lord and speaks of him in that way, in this way there's no falsity, since everything is possible in Krishna. Now, it quotes an argument which has been in a previous purport between the dispute of the two disciples, where one said Hare Ram is Lord Balaram, referring to Lord Balaram, and another of the sannyasi disciples said, no, it's referring to Lord Ramachandra. And so, and he says, Prabhupada says he's quite right as well. If one says that Hari Ram is Sri Balaram, he's also right. Those who are aware of Vishnu Tattva do not fight over all these details. And then it continues. In the Brahma Purana, it is said, the same personality of Godhead known in Vaikuntha as the four-handed Narayan, the friend of all the living entities, is known as Vaikuntha. and in the four, sorry, and the friend of all the living entities, and in the ocean of milk, Lord Svetadip, and who is the best of all dimensions. Some of them are very big and very small. The small sparks are compared to the living entities, and the large sparks are compared to the Vishnu expansions of Lord Krishna. All the incarnations emanate from Krishna, and after their end, their pastimes, they merge again into Krishna. Therefore, in the Puranas, Krishna is described as sometimes as Narayan, sometimes as Kshiro Dakshai Vishnu, sometimes as Garbo Dakshai Vishnu. Sorry. And sometimes as Vaikunthanath, the Lord of Vaikuntha. Because Krishna is always full, Muna Shankarshan, in his Krishna, and since all incarnations are manifested from the Mula Sankarshan, it should be understood that he can manifest different incarnations by his supreme will, even in the presence of Krishna. This is what Lord Sankarshan is doing for Krishna. He can expand in different incarnations. Great sages have therefore glorified the Lord in by different names. Thus, when the original person, the source of all incarnations, is sometimes described as an incarnation, there's no discrepancy. So, we can have so many discussions on the expansions of the Lord and where they're from and its origin, but ultimately it also concludes in the Bhagavad Gita that he's the source of everything spiritual and material. That Krishna says he himself is this. But with regards to further debates where there's this, appears to be a discrepancy where it says they come from different expansions, that Krishna is an expansion of Lord Narayan and so on and so forth. We don't enter into those debates. It's because they're basically the same. They're Vishnu Tattva. That this difference between persons or accounts in the Puranas is not really to differentiate, but it's to actually say they are the same. Which appears to be a contradiction in itself, but actually they aren't. You know, it is according to the as I can understand it here. Like he explains with Lord Ram and Lord, you know, and Lord Balaram. When we say Hari Ram, you don't need to debate on these things. You know, one person sees it this way, but they're actually the Lord himself. There's no difference. And when Lord Krishna comes, all these incarnations are in him as well. Anyway, they all come into him. But there's the very interesting aspect for me is on the complex Vishnu Tattva that sometimes can be, you know, go into debates, is the other aspect in these verses where it says Lord Krishna appears first. It says, the activities of Lord Ram are full of suffering, but Lakshman of his own accord tolerated those sufferings. Now, it's the verse before that, it says, Lord Nityananda Swarup formerly appeared as Lakshman and served Lord Ramachandra, his younger brother. So, in the case of Lakshman, he's in the younger brother position, so his relationship with Lord Ram differs to that of Balaram with Lord Krishna. And it says here that Lakshman, of his own accord, he tolerated the suffering. The pastimes and activities of Lord Ram are full of suffering. And so he wanted, he came later in the Dwapara Yuga as Balaram, and he was the older brother, and he would play with Krishna as an older brother, but also he would tell him what to do, and also, but he acted as a servant of Krishna first and foremost, and he served him in those roles, not necessarily to take on those roles himself, but for the pleasure and the service of Krishna. So if he's an older brother, Krishna wants an older brother, and under the Yogamaya potency, Krishna relishes this position of being under his older brother. And likewise, when they play together as equals, then he relishes that position. And so it's a bit of an inconceivable situation how the Supreme Lord does relish these, but at the same time, Prabhupada, he gave a nice example when he was waiting for some minister, and he was told to wait by the secretary. And when the door was ajar, he saw the minister playing with his young child, with a child on the back of the minister, and he was pretending to be a horse. The minister, the father, was savoring the moment of pretending to be a horse. It was an exchange of love. So it gives us a little indication of how the Supreme Lord and his devotees and their relationships are beautiful and worth savoring. And the more that we can contemplate this inconceivability nature of the Lord, how he himself wants to be subordinate to it, the devotee, the more we can appreciate actually the power of love, the power in relationships, the loving relationships, how love controls everything. We see it in our day-to-day lives, but it's in this world it has a distorted form. It's not perfect because we're imperfect. It's not the total unconditional love that wants nothing of itself. It's with Krishna, it's his pastimes. He has Yogamaya potency to help him in his pastimes. And he surrenders to this situation of the Yogamaya potency to somehow enjoy. He's the supreme enjoyer. But also, there's the other part where those who are subordinate to Krishna, they enjoy as well, because they see his pleasure. They are so happy when they see Krishna happy, and when Krishna sees them happy, he's happy, and he wants to give them pleasure. And so there's this transcendental exchange of rasa and service between the Lord and his devotees. The devotees want to serve the Lord, and the Lord wants to serve the devotees. And this is the intimate nature of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's a very high-level tattva between the Lord and his devotees, and cannot be understood by those who are not devotees at all. But the other aspect, and I just wanted to maybe look at this aspect, because it tells of our relationship with the Lord as well, how that we should not only in our service relationship, Lord, there are certain things that we have to tolerate and practice in our devotional service. And there's very nice examples here which I found. You know, just like Lachman, he still participated in the pastimes and the suffering of Lord Ram. But this is just some examples of tolerance that I found. And so it says, this is from Mahavendra Puri. It says here, Mahavendra Puri speaking. He says, let the sharp moralist accuse me of being illusioned. I do not mind. Experts in the Vedic activities may slander me as being misled. Friends and relatives may call me frustrated. My brothers may call me a fool. The wealthy Mammon knights may point me out as mad, and the learned philosophers may assert that I am much too proud. Still, my mind does not budge an inch from the determination to serve the lotus feet of Govinda, though I am unable to do it. And this seems to be sometimes a devotee's lot in life, that there are so many statements and accusations about the philosophy and what they do, that whether it be from friends, relatives, philosophers, wherever it may come from, the tolerating and forgiveness aspect must be there. And it says, but the Mahavendra Puri says he still asserted in his determination to serve the lotus feet of Govinda. And then he puts a little comment, though I am unable to do it. It's a point of absolute humility. He's a great acharya, but the acharyas, for some reason, have this quality of this humility. They do not see themselves as acharyas. They don't see themselves as great souls. They actually feel this way, although I am unable to do it. And Prabhupada was very similar in this way. And he would at times take the most humble position with his devotees, attributing everything of the success of the mission through them who were sent by his spiritual master. So he attributed it to his spiritual master and to the disciples, that whatever success there was based on coming from them. And that he felt himself in a fortunate position. And so this was his vision. And then it says here, one day Bali approached Prahlad and asked, which is actually meritorious, forgiveness or use of strength? Prahlad, neither forgiveness nor the use of prowess is meritorious in all situations. If one were always to forgive his servants, dependents or enemies, and the strangers, they would disrespect him. When one always forgives the mean-minded servants, gradually they steal away all of the wealth and fail to respond to his commands. The wife of one who always forgives begins to act as she pleases, and then, along with the servants, she takes to all kinds of vices. On the other hand, One who simply punishes and never forgives soon finds himself bereft of friends. Indeed, everyone comes to hate such an unforgiving person. And when there is the slightest opportunity, they do something to harm him. Therefore, the conclusion is that prowess and forgiveness should be exhibited at the proper times. My dear Bali, the following persons should be forgiven. One who has done nice service in the past, even if guilty of a grave fault. One who offends simply due to ignorance or folly. One who is a first-time offender. One who has committed some wrong against his will. In addition, other offenders may sometimes be forgiven just to create a good public image. The following persons should not be forgiven. One who is knowingly offended and yet claims to be innocent, even if his offense is slight. And the second offender, no matter how small, his crime. So that's interesting comment that, and I heard my Guru Maharaj say this, the Vaishnav, he never defends himself, actually. Shishi Adago Kunandikishai, Shishi Gornitai Kishai, Shishi Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Kishai. So this one, another, the person who is knowingly offended yet claims to be innocent, even if his offense is slight, he should be chastised. And the second offender, because it is the second offense, no matter how small the crime, again should be chastised. It's almost in contradiction to what it says in the Bible. And Lord Jesus, he says, if person comes to, he was asked by his disciples, how many times should we forgive? And he says, always. So how do we resolve that? It's resolved in that in our day-to-day dealings, there's authority. And authority must always be there. It's a case that chastisement should come through authority, whether it be parents, spiritual master, older brothers, or whatever. It should be there. So, but in the general populace, Papubad, he's a nice quote, he says, because there are differences of opinions and different persons, minor offences should be tolerated. So in a general sense, we can say, yes, Jesus is right. You can forgive them because in the fact, by just knowing the nature of this age, we must be on this platform of understanding and tolerating these sort of things. But in a place of authority, in a place of teaching, then it's regarded that it must be carried out. It's for the betterment. In other words, it's an act of love rather than an act of sort of harshness and cruelty. It's an act of love. This is very interesting, this tolerating, this forgiveness and its nature. It must be looked upon from different points of view. And then it says, here, this is, there's this nice verse from the 10th canto. It says, my dear Lord, one who earnestly waits for you to bestow his causeless mercy upon him, all the while patiently suffering the reactions of past misdeeds and offering respectful obeisances with his heart, words and body, is eligible for liberation, for it is his rightful claim. So we have to also understand that our situations and others' situations, that they're actually performing the reactions of their past misdeeds. So each of us, we're interacting with each other. And there should be this understanding. Sometimes we offend each other unknowingly, or if by our nature that we react in a certain way due to some sensitivity of the modes of material nature. And so we patiently suffer the reactions of past misdeeds and offering you all respect, because we understand that all past misdeeds, actually, they have their effect, and they come from Krishna, actually. They're just an expansion of Krishna's mercy. And if we can understand that, then we should tolerate and understand that. So there is a difference. It's self-realization. It's to do with self-realization. That this toleration is that we understand that this is Krishna's mercy, that he's helping me in some way. And then it says, if we patiently suffer the reactions of our past misdeeds, then and continue offering obeisances in our hearts and our words and our mind and body, then surely we're eligible for liberation, for it becomes the rightful claim. So we are not on the position of expecting the mercy of the Lord to be always a pat on the head. It's just not like that. It's not reality. And but also in the purport to that, which is very nice, actually, a sincere devotee earnestly desires to go back to the Lord's abode. Therefore, he willingly accepts the Lord's merciful punishment and continues offering respectful obeisances to the Lord with his heart, words, and body. Such a bona fide servant of the Lord, considering all hardship, is a small price to pay for gaining the personal association of the Lord. Certainly, he becomes the legitimate son of God, as indicated by the word Dayabak. Just as one cannot approach the sun without becoming fire, one cannot approach the Supreme Pure, the Lord Krishna, without undergoing rigid purificatory process, which may appear like suffering, but is in fact the curative treatment administered by the personal hand of the Lord. So we can treat it as the personal intervention of the Lord, that we're suffering. That somehow, that it's all good. That he's all good. But also, his devotees are all good. So we're not talking about the Supreme Lord as also the administrator of mercy, but those who are responsible for giving mercy in different ways, they're also the agents of this transcendental mercy. It's our inner concept that must be changed when things aren't going right, where we don't go into the dualities of happy and sad, like and dislike. Basically, everything is actually Krishna, an expansion of Krishna's potency. Everything that's happening to us in this world is, and how we are living and how we have to get through life are, again, an exhibition of his mercy and his glory. And if we can have this vision, and if we, it says, also in one of the purports in chapter 12, devotional service, better to suffer than complain. because we know the nature that with suffering, it has, it can be pacified with toleration, actually. What I mean by that is that if you suffer and don't complain, then the reaction is not so big. We don't make a big deal of it. It doesn't become so significant. It says that actually our problems, or whatever the so-called problems, are given significance only by our mentality, by our minds. And so in this way, we can understand that actually our getting through devotional service depends on our attitude. Because it's understood that in the 11th canto, it speaks that actually that we live in the world of the imagination, which is based on the modes of the material nature, in the mind. And that it says in this imagination that whatever happens to us, it's not real, actually. It's a fantasy, because it's based on the dualities of the mind. It's not on the reality of the vision that everything is coming from Krishna. So if we can understand our position, that actually each of us, we live in the world of the mind, conditioned by the modes of material nature. And if we follow these simple prayers that guide us and help us, it says that this person's not out to get you, actually. Krishna's out to get you. And that's the way we should see it. Isn't it? That he's out to get us, no matter what. No matter what way or method is necessary to make us humble. We have to be humbled. This is the problem with a false ego. It's such a barrier. We have to accept that humility is a case of being humiliated sometimes. And it's Krishna. It's good for us. So he is getting at us. He's definitely getting at us. He's definitely given a stick. But it's his stick, and it's the best stick. And that person is just an instrument of Krishna. And you should take it that way, actually. But the person in authority, it's a different story. They're training, like Prabhupada. He was training his disciples, and he would chastise them. But he had Krishna's stick. He was using Krishna's stick. There lies the difference. So we have to accept Krishna's stick where it comes from. The Lord himself and other living entities, wherever it comes from. Even though they may not be our spiritual master, we still tolerate. It's really good for us. So like Lakshman, he had to tolerate that position as the younger brother of Lord Ramachandra. And he accepted it gladly. But later, he came back as Balaram, and he relished the transcendental pastimes of Lord Krishna together in different roles and as his blissful servant. So even the Vishnu Tattva in their Yogamaya covering, they suffer, but it's to show us. It's to show us by example how we can be in those circumstances. They show by example, and it's what I can see here in these verses. Again, and these are again just part of Lord Nityananda, his different aspects. He showed so many things, did Lord Nityananda, which goes on a bit later because it goes into the quality of his mercy. Next, which is even, you know, this is very deep tattva in a sense, because we're talking about relationships and the Lord's mercy and Vishnu tattva. It's quite complicated to get, to comprehend. But we can understand it's basically, it's the Lord's pastimes. And we don't differentiate between the Vishnu Tattva for debate. It's there. And every one of them are Krishna. So it almost, the vision of the Vaishnav is to say, yes, he's Krishna. Lord Narayan is Krishna. You would take it like that. They're all incarnations. But there's the original instruction. Aham sarvasya prabhavam mata sarvam pravartate. In all circumstances, everything comes from Krishna. Vishnu Tattva, all living beings, our circumstances, whatever happens in this day, is coming from Krishna. And if we can understand it as that, then you don't get into this dualities. I like this bit of Krishna, but I don't like that bit of Krishna. Because it's offensive. You know. It's an offense to Krishna and his expansions of his of himself in circumstances. Okay, so I think that's it.